And so I want to start today with a story by Buddhist monk Jack Kornfield in his wonderful book, A Path with Heart. And he tells a story that I think is a perfect way to open this talk this morning called Great Expectations. So I want to share it with you. One day in the market, the Sufi cleric Mullah Nasruddin met a man who was contemplating marriage. And the man asked the mullah whether he had ever considered marriage. And here's what he said. "Yes, years ago I wanted to marry and set out to find the perfect woman. First I traveled to Damascus, where I found a perfectly gracious and beautiful woman, but discovered that she was lacking a spiritual side. Then I went to Isfahan, where I met a woman who was deeply spiritual, comfortable in the world, and beautiful as well. Unfortunately, we did not communicate well together. Finally, I came to Cairo, and I found her. She was the ideal woman, spiritual, gracious, beautiful, at ease in the world, perfect in every way." "Well," said his friend, "did you marry her?" "No," said the mullah sadly. "Unfortunately, she was looking for the perfect man." we often go into expectations, right? I mean, often this happens. We go in with great expectations of something, and then they fall short. But none of us here in this room needs to have our expectations for 2012 fall short. And that's what I want to talk about today, about some steps that we can take, and I want to suggest some ways that we can truly know that all is well in 2012. Wouldn't that be good to know? All is well in 2012. No matter what is going on in the world, no matter what's going on in our life, all is well in 2012. Now, as we begin, I want to first clarify the differences between resolutions and expectations. There's a big difference. And this is the time when a lot of people are making New Year resolutions. I don't know about you, I have given up making New Year's resolutions for two reasons. One, because I never keep them. Do you? I mean, I'm not going to ask for hands. But, how many of you make a resolution and then you don't keep it? So then you feel guilty and you doubt, on your yada, yada, yada on yourself. And then the second reason I don't make New Year's resolutions anymore is that halfway through the year, I forget what I resolved to do or not to do. And again, there's that guilt and frustration of not being able to fulfill that resolution. And so, to me, resolutions seem to be wishful thinking rather than expectant thinking. And I don't know about you, but I would rather spend my time and energy creating great expectations, wouldn't you? Because resolutions, just from the get-go, seem to be diluted with doubt. We make those resolutions, but we don't keep them. Because I don't think from the get-go we feel we can do that or are able to do that. And so expectations, to me, are more created out of a sense of certainty, an inner knowing. They're what great dreams are made of. It's interesting. The dictionary definition of the word expect, and I love this definition, expect implies a high degree of certainty and usually involves the idea of preparing or envisioning. Isn't that what we do in Unity? We want that degree of certainty because we know that when we vision and when we, do our work and prepare the way, we know that by visioning and preparing, we're certain that the expectation will come forth. And so to me, expectations is where it's at. But there are steps that we can follow that will help us to bring forth our hopes, our dreams, our desires, our great expectations. But there are a few things I think that we need to understand first. And the first thing that I think is very important that we understand is that we're not just merely puppets of a whimsical God, responding to a God that kind of, is kind of here today, gone tomorrow. But we are co-creators with God. Very big difference. And we need to shift that thinking that we're not just puppets. We are here as co-creators. It shifts the energy. It shifts where the power is coming from. And so we are co-creating our world with God. We're made in the image of God, and we're co-creating this world with God. In and through, I love as you sang, you know, that God is playing and dancing and moving and creating in and through and as us. And so we are equipped with bringing forth the great and wondrous things in our life. But we have to know what we're doing. And we have to also understand that we're creating. Whether we're aware of it or not, we're creating all the time. And so the place that we have to get to is being aware that we're creating, and then being aware of what we're creating. Fridtjof Capra, who is a modern physicist, wrote a wonderful little book called The Tao of Physics. And in this book, he talks about what we really are. And I love this definition. He says, we're whirling energy. Isn't that a great image? You're whirling. So that the dancer, you know, as Becky dances, and, you know, the whirling energy. We're dynamic, pulsating, alive. We are bundles of activity, vortices of energy without hardness, density, solidarity, or actuality. Interesting. And so we're not what we think we are. We think we're firm, immovable, and solid. But as the physicists tell us, we are whirling energy. We're whirling vortices of energy, moving, living, pulsating. We are wondrously made. Even our co-founder Charles Fillmore knew this. And he called this energy spiritual substance. And we spent 8 months studying about spiritual substance during our fall program when we studied Spiritual Economics by Eric Butterworth. So you should know, if you've been through that program here, you should know what spiritual substance is. He calls this energy spiritual substance, mind essence, out of which everything is made. This substance, it's spiritual substance. Matter is merely a limited concept of divine substance. And so God is spirit, creative energy out of which everything visible comes. Everything comes out of this energy. And so what we do is we take our thoughts, our images, our expectations, and we begin to mold and shape and form this living energy of spirit. And that's how we get our world. That's how we co-create with God. And so the first thing we need to understand is we are co-creating all the time with God. Second thing we need to understand is everything is first an idea in mind. Everything that's created, everything that we see in the visible realm, first began as a thought in mind. And then what we do is we take the faculty of imagination, and just like working with a pair of scissors, we cut out of this universal substance the deepest desires of our heart. And so what we believe matches what we create. What we create matches what we believe. It's our third basic unity principle. Thoughts held in mind produce in the outer after their kind. And so it matches up. We are, every single one of us, the creative power of spirit that is within us. In unity, we call it the Christ mind. We're creating through that power of creativity within us, or through the power of the Christ mind. This is where all the dreams that we dream come from. It's out of this creative energy of the Christ mind, the creative power of spirit. All of the dreams come. Everything that, you know, that we see comes out. All of our greatest expectations come from this invisible spiritual substance that we are forming and shaping through the power of our minds. This living energy of spirit, and it comes into being. And so it's really important for us to really understand and believe with certainty that we can achieve our dreams. Jesus said it like this. He said, all things are possible. He didn't just say, well, some things, you know, maybe kind of this or that. He said, all things are possible to him that believes. Now, a modern day way of saying this could be, that which you can conceive and believe, you can achieve. That which you can conceive in your mind and really believe in your heart, you can then see that become come forth in what you achieve. Now, we saw this last year. I want to just kind of review a couple of things that we as a spiritual community did together. If you remember, earlier last year, we made the decision that we were going to really focus on a vibrant and exciting youth ministry. Because when I got here about a year ago, only a few kids were coming, and now we're having upwards to about 30. And our kids, didn't they do a great Christmas pageant a couple weeks ago? They were wonderful, you know? And our teens, our YOUers are going to regional rallies and conferences. And don't you wish you knew these spiritual principles when you were that age? Really wish we did. Few of you do. Patty, you grew up in Unity, didn't you? You've been it for 50 years. And there's some people here who've been, I know, you've been in Unity for 50 years or more, right? So there's some of us who've been, but can you imagine growing up as a little baby in this wonderful Unity philosophy? And so last year what we did was we made the commitment to hold a vision of a dynamic and vibrant youth ministry. We didn't know how that was going to happen or look, but we named it, we envisioned it, we defined the dream, and you know the movie Building Your Field of Dreams, you know, build it and they'll come. And so we named, you know, we have to know what the dream is, and then you have to define it. And so we named it, we claimed it. You know, even the people who came to Jesus, they knew exactly what they wanted. I want to see. I want to walk. I want to be healed. So you can't have the miracle of your dream unless you can name it. And so we held that vision of a dynamic and exciting youth ministry. And then we, holding that vision, we also defined what it was that we needed to bring forth that dream and what it needed to fund the dream. And so what we then did is several families right before Easter came forth and said, we'll put up a match at Easter, on Easter Sunday. And we had a $20,000 match. And you all matched it with even more, $33,000. We had a great Sunday, and that money all went to fund our youth program. Then we had the example during the summer where all of a sudden we realized we really desperately needed a new roof on the church. And so I have to admit this, not really practicing spiritual principle, I don't think. We went to the bank and thought, okay, we can get a loan because we didn't think we could do it. Well, the bank looked at our financials and they said, you know, the last two fiscal years you've ended in the red, in the negative. We're not going to lend you the money. And so we came back and the board sat down and said, okay, we're going to do it in two phases. We'll do phase one and phase two. So we created the dream. We defined the dream. We then claimed what it was that we needed to fund the dream. And guess what? Y'all stepped up. We didn't need to go to the bank. It was already here, but we didn't define the dream closely enough, and we didn't ask for what we needed to fund it. And so now, you know, phase one is paid for. Now, we just have to wait for the weather to cooperate so we can put the roof, so the roof can be put on. But we've collected the money for phase one. And we already have money that we're putting towards phase two. And we'll be able to do the roof over the sanctuary and the offices, which are the two critical areas. And so thank you, God, that the banks turned us down. As a treasurer, aren't you glad they turned us down? Because it forced us to go to principal, define the dream, and ask for what we need. And y'all came forth. And so when the roof is installed, the sanctuary and the office, phase one, we will have a roof installed and completely paid for. And we don't have to go into debt to do it. Isn't that? Yeah, Give yourself a... Thank you, God. And thank you to each one of you. Now, we didn't stand around and say, well, you know, well, we started to, but then we got into principle and we said, no, we can do this. This is possible. And we defined the dream. We didn't say, well, you know, maybe we, you know, we know, we don't, there's not the money in this congregation to do that. I mean, we didn't get into that yada, yada, yada. We declared it to be so, and then we took the steps that were necessary to bring forth that idea from the invisible to the manifest realm of the outer world. Deepak Chopra, in his wonderful book, Seven Spiritual Laws for Success, it's an older book, but I love, in a chapter on the law of intention and desire, he spells out very clearly 5 steps to move our expectations into action. And I just want to share them briefly with you today. So to move our expectations into action, the first thing he says we need to do is to get quiet and centered. That's the first thing before we do anything. We stop. We get quiet and get centered. How Deepak Chopra talks about it, he says it's you slip into the gap. That's his language. In unity, we say it's meditation. We go into meditation and we go into the silence. We get still and quiet and then and in touch and in tune with the infinite presence of divine spirit. Second step that we do is then we release into this silence your intention. You get quiet and centered, and then you release into that silence your intention. You release into that silent place your greatest expectations. And then you plant them in that fertile soil of your mind. And then you begin to watch them bloom and grow in the right and perfect way at the right and perfect time. Third step is then you remember your connection with spirit. Remember that you are a child of God. Remember that you are made in the image of God. Remember that you are a co-creator with God. You're co-creating your world. Remember that. It's your third step. As you get quiet, you release your intention, your expectation to the silence. You know and remember that you are a co-creator with God. And then the fourth step, which I think is one of the hardest of the steps, is let go of the outcome. You don't know what's best. I hate to tell you that, or you might think you do. But from our very limited little, you know, it's like a big fence, and we're looking through a little knothole, and we're saying we see the entire universe. But we see our own little portion of it. We don't know the greater good that's out there for us. And so once we do our work and we get centered, we release our desire, expectation into the silence. We know that we're co-creator with God. We're one with that infinite presence. We then let go of the outcome, trusting God, knowing that and expecting that everything's going to work out for the highest and best good of everyone. And you let go of the how it should look. And this is the hardest step for most of us because we want to control it, don't we? Be honest. We want to say how we want it to look, but let go of the outcome. And then the fifth step is don't sweat the small stuff. Just don't sweat. You know, let the universe, let God handle the details. You know, you determine the what, let God handle the how. Because then you'll go back into the silence and you'll begin to get information and insight into the how. Once you've released your expectation into that silence, then the next time you go in, you'll constantly be fed the exact next right and perfect step if you listen and you center yourself in the silence. And so if we do these 5 steps, we can then let go and we can watch, you know, how, you know, we can watch it unfold in just the right and perfect way and how it should unfold, right? We did that with the youth ministry and with our roof project. And notice that I did not say how we want it to be. We do the steps, we do the work, and then we step back and we let it unfold in the perfect way and in the perfect divine timing. And so then, you know, because at that point, if we can just open ourselves to God, all the good that God is, let release our expectations into that wonderful divine energy, then we can plant our expectations in that fertile soil and let it grow. And we can watch everything around us just begin to glow and grow into what it's meant to be. And so, what are your great expectations for Unity of Bellevue in 2012? Now, I can't wait to see what God has in store for us. It's going to be a magnificent year. And but what is that we're to do? I want to just kind of plant a seed, because in March, on Sunday, March 18th, we're going to be doing an Appreciative Inquiry Summit here throughout the church. And it will be, our Sunday service is going to look very different. You're going to all be invited to come at 9 o'clock. We're going to start at 9. We're going to go for several hours. We're going to be creating together, visioning and creating together our future. We're going to be defining who we are, what we want to become. And it's a wonderful process. Those of you who came to those little getting to know you circles that I had when I first got here a little over a year ago, that was a little version of an Appreciative Inquiry. But we begin to talk to each other. We share stories of why do we come here? Why do we love this place? And then it builds an energy, and we hear these stories of, wow, this happened and this happened and my life was transformed and my life was transformed. And we have this wonderful, we realize, wow, this is who we are. And our mission, vision, and values begins to come out of that. And we'll have lunch together, and then early afternoon, right after lunch, we'll have a visioning session where we begin to visualize out where do we want to be 3 to 5 years from now. And then we'll come up with and agree to 3 to 5 goals that will take 2 to 3 to 5 years, depending on what those goals are, to accomplish, so that everybody will be a part of the visioning and the dreaming of the future of Unity of Bellevue. It's very exciting. So make sure it's on the back of panel of your bulletin. Make sure you take your bulletin home and get that March 18th date on your calendar and plan to spend from like 9 to, I think, about 2 in the afternoon. We're going to ask, because it's very, very important to the future of this church. We want everybody to participate and to have a say in who we are and where we're going. So I'll keep reminding you and telling you more about what we'll be doing, but it's March 18th. And so I think it's time for this unity message to get out in the Bellevue community. Do you agree that it's time that we get our message out and people know who we are? And so when we can use these five steps that I just talked about, and we can begin to open ourselves up to the greater good God has in store for us, then we'll be able to plant those seeds of our greatest expectations, and we'll be able to watch them grow, not only us, but to grow our church. And I'm not saying in numbers. I'm saying in consciousness that we'll be able to grow. Because what we do know is that everything, anything great, begins first as an idea, as a seed, right? Everything begins first as an idea, a seed that we plant. And I want to have a wonderful story I want to end with today. It's about Marcia Evans, who received such a seed. And Marcia Evans was called to a special meeting by her science teacher. In fact, her whole class was called to a special meeting by her science teacher, Mr. York, during the last week of her high school graduation years ago. The teacher, Mr. York, gave her and 19 other seniors a charm or a tie tack with a seed pearl in it. And he said, that seed pearl stands for your potential, the things that you have going for you. And just as a seed placed inside an oyster can grow into a pearl of great value, so each of you has a seed of greatness in you. But there was one problem. Marcia was pregnant and not married. Her mother had been saving a few dollars a week for college, hoping her daughter could escape the coal mines in the Pennsylvania town in which she was born. But college was forgotten. Marcia was now married, and her husband went to school instead. Another child came along, and every once in a while, Marcia would look at her charm on her bracelet that carried that seed pearl, wondering if she would ever realize the potential Mr. York had seen in her. Well, then one day when Marcia was 35, her mother happened to mention to her that the money for college that she had put away 17 years ago was still there. Amazed, Marcia enrolled in a teacher's college. She struggled to graduate, sometimes doubting her own ability, but she finally made it and got a job teaching English. The end of her first year, she was stunned to be nominated for a national award for excellence in first-year teaching. The application for the award asked her to tell how one of her own teachers had inspired her. So, of course, she wrote the story about Mr. York's seed pearl. Marcia Evans was one of the 100 awards granted that year. And when she finally saw Mr. York during a newspaper interview about the award, she learned, too, that he had thought he would never succeed. She asked what had turned him around as a teacher. And he replied, renewed spirituality and seeing other people's faith in me. And suddenly Marcia understood. Well, that's what we had in common, wasn't it? She said. The kids you gave the seed pearls to, you saw 20 young people who lacked confidence. No, said Mr. York. I saw 20 people with seeds of something great. And so I stand here before you and I see a room full of people, a whole church of something great, a seed of something great within each one of you, great expectations. And I can't wait to see what we're going to create together this year. And I want us to affirm all is well in 2012. Let's say that together. All is well in 2012. And my wish for you and my prayer is that you have a fulfilling and a wonderful, a prosperous, and a very, very happy new year filled with great expectations. God bless you and happy new year.